This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton joins me live in studio, local author, award-winning author, cartographer, extraordinaire, historian, online at rickbritton.com. It's good to see you. How are you, sir?
Good to see you, too. What a beautiful day, huh?
Yeah. It is
unbelievable.
Gorgeous. It is gorgeous. Are you ready for Donald Trump to buy some property here in Albemarle County?
That's what I hear. Huh?
It sounds like he wants to create a little playground for the rich and famous.
Maybe have a resort.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
I got the perfect name for it.
What is it?
The Trump Jefferson.
Of course. Of course. Yeah.
You're fired.
It sounds like it's going to be like a, if he gets the property, which he very well could, if he gets the right price, of course, sounds like it's going to be like another Keswick Hall kind of place.
Yeah, it could be. Of course, we're really jumping ahead. I had a chance to be on that property. I didn't see the house, but I got a tour of that carriage museum that he used to have up there. And it was the nicest carriage museum, you know, you could imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With all sorts of antique.
Years ago. It had a curator, and there were seven of us that showed up one day in an SUV. We were all working at Monticello. We called ahead and made an appointment. And when seven of us got out of the vehicle.
They have to blindfold you as they took you in?
And as seven
like
of
Area
us got
51?
Out of the vehicle, he said this was the largest group he'd ever taken through the museum.
Oh, he took you through?
He absolutely did.
John Kluge?
No, the curator.
The
curator. That was pretty nice.
Yeah, those old wagons are really cool.
Oh, unbelievable.
You know, like they have a Smithsonian. It's really cool to see. And they're big. I mean, people climbing in and out of those things, they're way up off the ground, a lot of those things.
Yeah, you sort of, if you see some movies about, say, 18th century France or something, you every now and then see those traveling up and down the highways, you know, and the guys ride out from the woods and attack them and make everybody stand and deliver. But yeah, those things are tall and really big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking with Rick Britton, and we want to give away some Domino's, thanks to our good friends at Domino's. We have some Domino's gift certificates to give away today at 977-1070. And how do we do that, Rick? How do we give people free pizza?
Well, we actually have some Jefferson quiz questions. You want to do those?
Let's do it. 977-1070. Give me a call if you want to play, if you would like to win. That's how we do it. And by the way, I'll help you win. That's what we do. 977-1070 is the phone number. You want to win some Domino's? Thanks to our good friends at Domino's Pizza. We want to make sure you have something yummy. So give me a call. 977-1070. And the first question is what?
Here it comes. True or false? So you got a 50% chance on the first try. Modern day archaeologists consider Thomas Jefferson the father of their science. Is that true or false?
Let's go to the phones. Caller, your first name, please. Sign in.
Zelda.
Zelda, happy Wednesday. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Thank you for calling in. So so how you been lately? How's this winter going? You having a good winter?
Uh-huh, yeah, just enjoying these nice, warm days.
Yeah, today is gorgeous, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
Yes, they are.
Is Thomas Jefferson the father of American archaeology, true or false?
I'm going to take a guess and say true.
Absolutely right.
Zelda! Way to go, Zelda. You're the big winner. How did you know that?
I just took a guess, and just reading history, I just kind of put two and together, but I wasn't sure.
There you go.
Well, you got it. Hold on just a minute, and Channing is going to hook you up with some free pizza, because that's how we roll. Way to go, Zelda. And Rick, archaeology.
We're going to talk about this later down our list here of Thomas Jefferson's greatest contributions, but the short story is, and we'll get to this later on, in 1781, just as he was finishing Notes on the State of Virginia, Jefferson dug into a Monacan Indian burial mound that's only about 4 or 5 miles from where you and I are sitting right now, Coy. And in that afternoon, pretty much invented archaeology, modern archaeology, and stratigraphy. But we'll talk about that some more.
There you go.
And
How about
right here in Albemarle County?
There you go. The birth of American archaeology, born right here in Albemarle County. Let's go back to the phones. Caller, sign in, please. What's your first name?
Margo.
How are you?
I'm good. Very good.
It's good to hear your voice. Thanks for calling, Rick.
Say one thing.
Yeah.
And that was the carriage museum at the Kluge place.
Right.
Originally had been the cattle
Cattle barn?
Where they showed the cattle.
Oh. Wow. Like the prize cattle to sell for auction?
Exactly.
Ah, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Nice. Well, thanks for that information.
All right, Rick, do you have a question for Margot? I'd like to give her some pizza.
I do. Margot, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay, it's a multiple guess. So the Dome Room at the Rotunda at the University of Virginia hosted its first celebratory dinner in November of 1824. Who was it for? A, Daniel Webster. B, then President James Monroe. C, the Marquis de Lafayette.
It was a celebratory dinner in honor of a very special guest.
Right. In November, actually, November 4th of 1824. Who was it for?
Lafayette.
Absolutely right.
Way to go, Margot. How'd you know that, Margot?
I was a guest, but it was an educated guest. Let's put it that
very
way.
Very good.
Yeah, well, of
very
course.
Good.
Well, you listen to this program. Of course it's educated. Hold on just a minute. Thank you, Margo, for playing. She's on line two, and we're going to give her some free pizza, and we got a line open if you want to play at 977-1070. That's before the school opened.
It is before the school opened, and actually the rotunda wasn't even completed, but they all climbed upstairs into the dome room of 400 people and had a dinner.
Isn't that amazing?
It is
400 people. That's a lot of people in that
room. That's a lot of folks. Evidently,
I mean, they're eating on their laps.
According to the reporter from the Fredericksburg newspaper, I think it was the Fredericksburg Herald at the time, they used concentric circles to get all those people to sit down in that dome room because it's not all that big of a room when you think about it.
Yeah.
For 400 folks.
And it was had gaping holes open to the outside. Everybody's in hard hats kind of thing.
They hadn't finished the roof. Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones and caller sign in, please. Your first name.
My name is Spencer Clem.
Spencer, how are you, sir?
Good.
How old are you?
14.
All see, right. we got a budding Jefferson scholar
That's
right here.
Right.
Spencer, you're on the right show.
Thanks.
What grade are you in?
I am in ninth grade.
Are you a Jefferson fan?
Well, I've been to Monticello a few times, but
there
I always like going up with family.
There you go. There That's you go. Good. You got a good start. Can't start any better place than that. Rick, do you have a question for Mr. Spencer here?
I do. Spencer, you ready?
Yep.
Okay, true or false? The Spanish, out of what's today Mexico, dispatched a small army to intercept and stop the Lewis and Clark expedition. Is that true or false?
So Lewis and Clark are going west.
That's right.
Is it true or false that the Spanish sent some troops to stop them?
Right.
From getting into...
From proceeding.
From Spanish territory out there.
Right.
On
right.
the far end
In
of
Mexico.
It, right?
In Mexico.
There you go.
Yeah.
How about a false?
Ooh.
Oh, man.
Try again.
All right, Spencer. Here's how we play on this show. We're going to give you another try.
Okay.
So think wisely now, very cautiously.
Choose wisely.
If it's not false, what do you think it is?
Maybe true.
Absolutely. Good job, Spencer.
There you go, Spencer. That's how you do it. So, Rick, explain this to Spencer and me.
Actually, that was a tough one because most people, even if you read Undaunted Courage, which is the best book on the Lewis and Clark expedition, there's only a brief mention of this, but the Spanish were pretty upset, and they weren't exactly sure of the boundaries of the Louisiana Territory. Those boundaries weren't drawn. We look at maps in the history books, you know, like the maps that I draw, and we put absolute boundaries, but the boundaries were in dispute.
Very fluid, as they say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it had to do with things like headwaters of rivers and rivers, and they actually didn't know where all the rivers ran exactly.
So they did send troops to...
They're a little upset about a small army. You know, it was 40 men in the Corps of Discovery. You know, going up across northern Louisiana got them kind of upset.
Well, did they ever have altercations?
No, they didn't.
Did they get the fisticuffs, as they say?
They didn't get within a couple of hundred miles, but they sent a small force after them to stop them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Spencer, congratulations. Hold on just a minute, and Channing is going to hook you up with some free pizza. Let's rejoin our conversation with Rick Britton. You remember this?
You know, I was just going to ask you because it's obviously written to sound like Shaft, but it's not Shaft.
No, it's not Shaft. But it was huge. It was not only a very popular TV show, it was also a popular song on the radio.
So what was it?
Dun-dun. You don't remember this?
No.
It was SWAT.
SWAT.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Really big back in the 70s. It's so funny to think that a police TV show actually had a song that was really big top 40 song. Because they play that on like rock stations.
Well, CSI, two of the CSI shows have The Who doing their songs.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
I've never seen
The Who.
Is that a good show?
Yeah, it's a great show.
I'm very out of the loop on new TV. I'm still in the 70s.
Right? Hey, I'm still in the 18th century.
So let's talk about some of Thomas Jefferson's greatest hits.
Let's do that. We are actually up to what Thomas Jefferson considered his greatest contribution in his lifetime, authorship of the Declaration of Independence. And what's really amazing, what's amazing about this story is that when you consider the Committee of Five that were set aside by the Continental Congress to draft the Declaration, Jefferson's the youngest. Jefferson is probably the least known. Two of the other committee members are way more famous than Thomas Jefferson and, you know, are still famous. John Adams and Benjamin Franklin are also on that committee. And yet, you know, they turn to Jefferson and say, you're the guy who really needs to put this together. And years later, something like 45 years later, Adams wrote about this and they had this scene in that wonderful HBO special
about
John Adams. Yep. They had this scene. It's really doubtful whether Adams said this at the time, but 45 years later, he wrote this, and that was that, number one, they needed somebody to write this who wasn't as hated as John Adams was at the time. They needed somebody who was famous for his pen, and as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, of course, Jefferson became kind of famous around the colonies for a summary view of the rights of British America, where he took on Parliament and said, Parliament doesn't have the right to do these things to us.
Yeah.
And then number three, and maybe the most important thing out of this list that John Adams wrote 45 years later, the Congress, needed a Virginian to be at the head of this. And of the Virginians in Congress, the five or six or so, Jefferson obviously had the most talent.
And why a Virginian?
Virginian because on the 7th of June, Richard Henry Lee had made the statement in Congress, had brought it from Virginia, saying that these colonies are and of a right ought to be free and independent states.
So
he put that on the table. So Virginia
proposed the idea.
That made that first statement on June 7th. So this is a month earlier. So Virginia was already in that camp, and Virginia was the most populous colony, most populous state by far. In fact, you have to add the populations of the two closest to approximate Virginia's population. So they needed the biggest, the most powerful, the most populous state to be in the lead on this thing.
Yeah. So Jefferson is given the task then as a member of this committee to write the first draft.
The first draft.
Yeah.
And he works,
which is an important thing to underscore because he was heavily edited. Some people might not know that. They might not teach that in schools that it was edited.
And heavily might be a little bit exaggerated.
Heavily edited?
I wouldn't say heavily. He was edited. I know that he at the time thought he was heavily edited.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm reacting to.
But I know.
Because he bristled, right?
Very defensive about this. And they had a great scene, again, in that HBO special where they have Franklin suggesting some alterations to Jefferson's words. And, of course, Jefferson being a wordsmith, being only 33 years old at the time.
That's amazing.
And being shy. Think of him. He's a really shy guy. And here is one of his idols, right? Benjamin Franklin. Telling him that, you know, for example, Jefferson initially wrote, instead of, oh, darn, I had the place mark, I thought. Jefferson didn't write, anyway, we'll come back to that.
Yeah,
but
if you can remember.
He was staying at a bricklayer's home. It was a bit a ways away from where the Continental Congress was meeting. It was the home of a bricklayer by the name of Graff. And Jefferson had rented an apartment upstairs.
Can you visit that?
I think that home is still standing, but don't quote me on that because I'm not an expert on downtown Philadelphia. But at the time, it was kind of on the suburbs of Philadelphia. It was away from the center where all the other delegates were. And an interesting part of the story was there was a large stable right across the way. And, of course, it's hot, so Jefferson had all of his windows open. And because of the stable, there are all these flies, and the flies kept buzzing in his room. while he's working on the draft of the Declaration of Independence. And it was a big deal because he's there by himself. He's got his desk, his portable desk that was actually made here at the joinery at Monticello. So I love to imagine him working with all these flies buzzing around, biting him through his silk stockings that are kind of flimsy and bugging him. And he worked on it for 17 days. Later on in life, Jefferson wrote The Purpose, and I think this is just beautiful, and I know you're familiar with this this little paragraph. Not to find out new principles or new arguments never before thought of, not merely to say things which had never been said before, but to place before mankind the common sense of the subject in terms so plain and firm as to command their assent, and to justify ourselves in the independent stand we are compelled to take, neither aiming at originality, look at Jefferson saying that, admitting that, neither aiming at originality of principle or sentiment, nor yet copied from any particular or previous writing, and some people would argue with that, it was intended to be an expression of the American mind. I love that.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. Yeah.
I love that, an expression of the American mind.
He's basically saying, I'm not trying to be original. There wasn't anything original there. I was trying to take very key principles, put them together, and be as clear as possible about what we're doing to the world.
Some of the most famous sentiments, that philosophy of man's equality, had been taken from John Locke, had been taken from Mason's writings, and some people would even say from Filippo Mazzai, the Italian vintner up here at Monticello, had been writing earlier on. He and Jefferson were writing newspaper articles. So some people would say that some of the things Italians would tell you, that Jefferson stole this from an Italian vintner who was living at Colli over there where Jefferson Vineyards are. And later on, and I wanted to finish up with this. Lincoln wrote some of the most greatest lines about the Declaration. All honor to Jefferson, to the man who, in the concrete pressure of a struggle for national independence by a single people, had the coolness, forecast, and sagacity to introduce into a merely revolutionary document an abstract truth applicable to all men and all times, and so to embalm it there that today and in all coming days it shall be a rebuke and a stumbling block to the very harbingers of reappearing tyranny and oppression.
That's why they read these things in Tiananmen Square and Tahrir Square.
And Tahrir Square.
Today.
Makes you think
200
of
years
Square,
later,
doesn't it?
Absolutely. Rick, thank you so much.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.